Cherokee was spoken in the home. Was English spoken in the home at all?
No, because my mom and dad couldn't really speak English, and so we all spoke Cherokee.
So then when you went to school...
Oh, gosh, when I went to school, I was in a different world. I didn't want to go to school because I couldn't understand the teachers, and I'd sit there all day. And then, of course, we had recess periods. That was a time I'd go out and play, and then we'd come back in, and it was very difficult time for us. I probably didn't really have the courage to say English words to probably in the fifth grade or somewhere along that way, because I never was very confident in myself in English. And a lot of the kids that went to school with us, they were Cherokees, and we all spoke Cherokee, you know.
It was in the fifth grade you began to feel conversational English was working for you?
I would say so, yeah, but my mom and dad couldn't really speak very good English. They're very broken. They would say to us, "It's a dashcloth day on that. You have to learn how to speak English. It's don't think it has. You're going to have to use it as you get older." We started picking up on it, but the other younger ones, they just got used to us speaking English, and now they can't speak Cherokee.
Yeah. Right.
So they just kind of lost it. And that's sad. I wish we'd all to learn the Cherokee now. Now we're trying to preserve the language.
Right. And I was just noticing here in the Tulsa world, Cherokee Nation opens $20 million language center.
I think that's awesome. I think that's long overdue. We should have been teaching the language way back. But you try to teach these younger kids, they have different interests. You know, they're all got these little phones, and now they text back and forth, and they can't just communicate like we used to. And that's just the changes in the world that are taking place, you know.
Right. Didn't your father work for the railroad?
Yes, he worked for the Kansas Southern Railroad, along with a lot of the other full-blown Cherokees, and they worked hard, very, very hard work. That's where he got hurt. The thing about living on that land, government land, the government said we had to work it. We had to make improvements in order for us to live there. We had 100 acres of land. Dad and we farmed it. And when he got hurt, we had to move because Dad couldn't work it. We couldn't work. And so we had to move into town. That was a cultural shock to us.
On this land, which your mother had acquired several acres of land on the original Four Killer family allotment.
Yeah, well, it's an East Peabody community. My grandpa had some land there, his family members, and they gave it to my mom. But it was all wooded area, rugged terrain. Only thing suitable there was just to build a house, and that's where we built one of those Jim Walters home. They built a shell. We had to finish it up.
Let's move you ahead to high school. Where did you go to high school?
Stillwell High School.
You were an athlete.
Yes.
And a very good one, I might add. Basketball was your sport.
Yes.
And you enjoyed that. In fact, Larry Adair, the former Oklahoma Speaker of the House, who's a couple of years behind you, said it was a joy to watch Charlie play basketball. He could jump very gracefully, like a deer, and he was an aggressive and focused player.
I enjoyed playing basketball very much. I think all my brothers, all of my family, my sister was very good. My sister was someone that could play like a boy, we said. She had a jump shot, could dribble. She was a great athlete.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, she got hurt. She had a very bad injury to her knee. We'd play around the yard playing basketball and things like that. So,
you played in high school. It was probably all Native American players in high school or not? Was it a mix?
It was mixed. Most of it was Native Americans, most of Cherokees. Back then, we traveled by cars instead of by bus. So Coach Brewington had a 57 Chevy, and he'd say, "All your Cherokees, get in here." And we'd ride with them. He'd ask us how to say words and stuff. But sometimes we used Cherokee words to make a play. You know, he'd call it out in Cherokee words, and that's why we'd go into the formation.
And nobody else understood, so, right?
Nobody knew what we were saying.
But then you were recruited into college in Bacon College.
I went to Bacon College under a basketball scholarship. Ken Hayes recruited me. But going back to education, I never knew what a grade point was about, but my grade point was pretty low. Actually, when I was in high school, I was flunking English, and the teacher told me I couldn't play Friday night because I was flunking. I went in and told my coach, I said, "My teacher says I can't play Friday night." I'm flunking English. He said, you're what? I said, I'm flunking English. So he left the gymnasium, and I could hear the superintendent, Mr. Hall, and principal arguing. And then when he came back in, he said, you will play Friday night. He said, but you better get your grades up. I said, yes, sir. When I went to Bay Cone, I made the team, but then the coach came back and said, you need to go to study hall because your grade point's low. I said, but you play intramural, independent basketball as you can because I want you back next year. And so I did. And of course, in college, you think, now I'm free, I'm on my own, you know, this and that. But next year I came back, and then I still didn't make it. I didn't really care for it back then because then I had friends in college and, you know, we could go. I mean, we didn't do anything bad. We just didn't have any money to do anything anyway, so we just roamed around however we could.
After you completed your first year of college, yes. Leroy Hummingbird, an acquaintance of yours, asked you if you wanted to go to California for the summer.
Yeah.
Tell us about that.
Yeah. Well, you know, I didn't like hauling hay, picking strawberries, picking beans and all this, or pulling weeds out of the strawberry patches. So the opportunity came, and I'd heard people say, when you go to California, you always get rich, you know, and I guess I wanted to get rich, whatever that meant back in the days. And so I told them I would go to California to go to work. I didn't know what kind of work they were talking about. All I knew was California sounded like an exciting thing to do. And so we went. We wound up in Mandeville Island, Stockton, California. We worked in the fields cutting asparagus. And the boss liked me. He asked me if I would transfer over to this other part of the camp, and I would work irrigating grapes. So we started irrigating grapes. This was just during the summer. I wound up driving trucks for hauling potatoes and onions and out of the fields. So I had a pretty good job, really. His name was Fernando Marino. I'll never forget his name. He asked me to stay, and I told him I was going back to Oklahoma. He said, I want you to stay. I want you to work for me. I said, I'm going back to college. So I came back.
Did you come back to Bay Cone?
Bay Cone, yeah. I think I had $77 when I got home. I didn't get rich.
In Wilma's final words here of this first chapter that she'd written about you, Wilma obviously lived in California. In fact, the family was relocated to California, that she told me in our oral history that she did. She writes here, in hindsight, Charlie and I were both in California in the 1960s. Charlie also made a brief jaunt to San Francisco with a few buddies before returning to Oklahoma. Then she writes, is it possible we stood near one another on a street corner or in an onion field?
Probably did. Back then, the farm workers were protesting about the wages and all, and they had recruited us, the Cherokees, to go to work for them to replace them, not knowing that. And years later, we were talking to Delores. And the more I listened, the more I thought, that's the time we were in California. And so I started talking about my time there, and she said, well, you were a scab.
And you had no idea.
I didn't know that.